Welcome to Cider Chat. On this episode, we're back in Adams County, the fruit belt of Pennsylvania, visiting with the folks at Plowman Cider. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. There is a buzz out there in Ciderville right now, and I'm talking about the cider-making buzz. Folks are slamming out the cider in terms of picking the apples, putting it in the press, getting the juice, and starting the ferment. I mean, for some folks, that actually started back in August, maybe even July, I don't know, because it's such a weird season. But in the thick of it right now for October, we're starting to see those late varietal apples coming in, and the cider makers are busy. So to all you folks out there in the production rooms, I am raising a glass to you and sending good cheer. I hope that you're getting plenty of rest. I know that's kind of awful to say, isn't it? But you got it. You got to take care of yourself during cider making. I know it could be almost like a 24/7. It's kind of like the calves are being born in the springtime. Well, in the fall for cider makers, it is game on. So good cheer to all of you, and I hope that you're kind of slamming it and that it's a really fruitful harvest. You're feeling good about the sugar levels that's in the apples themselves, and that what you will have, the end product, is exactly where you were hoping it would lead you. It is quite a little pony race, isn't it? You kind of hop on this like little pony and see where it will take you. Okay, maybe not quite a pony race, but it's fun. Either way, you know, cider is fun and it's hard work, and it's just, there's a passion for it. So enjoy the buzz in the air because it is fall in the Northern Hemisphere. We're going to be getting to our featured conversation with the folks at Plowman Cider coming up, but I do want to first welcome to all the listeners out there who are new to Cider Chat. This is a weekly podcast. We are counting up to episode 300. This here is episode 291. So we're 9 episodes away, which is absolutely terrific. The stories out there are so fantastic. And if you want to catch up a little bit, well, there's lots of archived podcast episodes at ciderchat.com. You just go to ciderchat.com/podcast. And that will show you the most recent episode along with the past 6 seasons. And each season has about 50 episodes. You get to see a fun photo, whoever was featured on that particular episode. And it will link you directly there to the show notes and a little bit more. Any kind of mentions that I say on each of the podcast episodes. Like this week, just I'll be talking a little bit about our sponsor, the Northwest Cider Club. So I'm going to take a little pause here and we'll be heading to that next.
Walking through the orchards.
I imagine that walking in the orchard in Big Sky Country would be a little like these magnificent trees, many of them actually quite old, believe it or not, because it does have a pretty big history out there for apple growing and orcharding. So expect, you know, some over 100-year-old apple trees. All right, so we got that. Some big, big mountains with perhaps a little bit of snow cap happening too. Maybe a trout fisherman out in the distance, because, you know, that is a big place to do anything outdoors. It's just like a paradise for outdoor experiencing and fun, maybe frolicking with the horses, going on to a dude ranch or something. And then you got this like other side scene where folks really love food. They really love their apples and they are making some slam dunk product. So let's talk about the Northwest Cider Club and what they're doing with all that, because this is put on by the Northwest Cider Association, which covers all of the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia. And for their fourth quarter cider box, they're featuring it as Big Sky, which means they're going to have 2 states, Montana and Idaho. And in the box, there's also going to be 1 little cider from a very special cider maker from Oregon who is using apples from Montana. I mean, that tells you something right there. You know, why not use some apples from Oregon? I mean, you know, you got it going on there too. But no, this particular cider maker really loves some of the apples coming out of Montana. And I just think, you know, in 2021, if you could do that, why the heck not, right? So my advice to you is while you're listening to this here podcast, take time now to go to nwciderclub.com/podcast and get in line for this cider offering. And sign up today for any one of the four different cider boxes from the Northwest Cider Club called the Big Sky. I mean, you gotta love it, right? That's right. nwciderclub.com/podcast. Oh my goodness, it is just so much fun to create jingles. nwciderclub.com/podcast. I just really love it. I kind of have been doing it all my life. I just love singing and making up songs. So if you are kind of interested in thinking, you know, geez, you know, I wouldn't mind sponsoring Cider Chat. I like to advertise what's going on here, and whether it's at my tasting room, my cidery, or my whatever part of the trade that I'm part of. We do accept sponsors, so that would be awesome. Just send an email to info@ciderchat.com. I'm hoping if you've listened this far, perhaps you are a regular listener of Cider Chat, and this podcast has been a good friend of yours on trips out into the big old world, or on your commute, or in your production room, or out in the orchard. And you've gotten some value from all the different guests that have shown up and just shared so much of a wealth of info for cider makers and thoughts and, you know, just kind of cool revelations too. I know that I've gotten a lot out of it. So if this podcast has impacted you in that way and you would like to support it, especially as we are getting up to episode 300, well, do consider becoming a patron of Cider Chat. In fact, there is a level for commercial cider makers if this is something you could do, which leads me to wanting to thank the following commercial folks in the cider trade, and that would be Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company, based in the lovely town of Ross-on-Wye, which is in Herefordshire, England. Absolutely stunning orchard, wonderful people, and they also have the Yew Tree Pub. Have a lot of single varietal ciders, and in fact, you're going to hear Ben Wenk discussing how they inspired him in this here podcast, so that's kind of cool. We also have Insider Japan, which is Japan's first and only bilingual magazine dedicated to all things cider. Then there's also Space Time Mead and Ciderworks, based in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. I actually had Dan Scheffler on the podcast just a couple of episodes ago, telling us all about what he's doing there, making mead, wine, and cider, and his whole branding. Just a lovely person, and he's selling cheese at his shop. He also has ciders to go and a little bit of equipment, too. So a really cool place right off the highway, right by Scranton, Pennsylvania. A really nice stop and excellent cider, award-winning. We've also had Oliver Cider and Perry over the course of the year. Every time I kind of make a little, well, you know, like the 200th episode or so, you know, wouldn't you know it, Tom Oliver, he sends it a little bit this way, which is pretty outstanding. So I do consider Tom Oliver to be part of the Cider Going Up campaign and a real special, outstanding, world-class cider maker himself. Also, the folks at Albemarle Ciderworks, that'd be Chuck Shelton. He's also been a big supporter of Cider Chat each year, especially during these kind of mega banner years. No pressure, Tom or Chuck. But I certainly appreciate, you know, that they notice Cider Chat that way and get value from it. I just love the idea of Chuck Shelton sitting there in the cider house, you know, taking a little break, listening to Cider Chat, maybe laughing his ass off at this or that or, you know, some funny thing. Or having his own thoughts on a particular topic and say, well, I don't know if I'd think that way. I might say this in reply to that. Yeah, that's Chuck Shelton, you know, just another world-class cider maker at the Albemarle Cider Works in Virginia. We also have the folks at Duck Chicken Cider. That is Colleen O'Sullivan and James Mann. They are based in London in a flat making cider in South London. And gosh, they are making good cider. Perry and cider, right? Wonderful people. And you could get some of their cider when you do go to London. It is in some of the best and finest pubs there. We also have Esoterra Cider, based in Dolores, Colorado. So that's out by the four corners of the U.S., so the states of Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. And so that's a beautiful high desert area, and they're winning a lot of awards. They just took a whole bunch of awards at Glencap, and that doesn't surprise me because from what I've seen of these folks, they've got it going on. And then just last week, we had the perfect publican, Kurt Henry himself from Taddy Bogle Cider Works in Acme, Pennsylvania, on the podcast and featured. And they are also part of the Cider Going Up campaign. In fact, when Kurt changed from being just a cider enthusiast to a full-fledged business, he immediately became part of the Cider Going Up campaign. And I can't tell you how much that support has meant to this year podcaster all these years. And then we also have the American Cider Association is part of the Cider Going Up campaign and has been a great supporter of Cider Chat just by, well, letting me show up to CiderCon on a media pass that I've really appreciated all these years. And now they're actually contributing to the podcast as part of the Cider Going Up campaign pledge at Patreon. And wouldn't you know it, coming up is going to be CiderCon in Richmond, Virginia. That's going to be February 1st through the 4th. And I'm planning on going. You know, I am. I just can't wait to see your face if you're going to be there. I'm counting on it. And boy, it's going to be down in balmy Richmond. I'll be heading down from the Northeast, which will be cold in February, and going to Virginia. I'm excited just at that thought that it's going to be so darn warm. And then to see all the cider friends, oh, I cannot wait. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that as we go on. But I just want to give a big old tip of the glass to the American Cider Association. I know it was, you know, a tough year, and they really helped cider makers far and wide kind of orchestrate and maneuver through this whole stinking pandemic. So kudos to all of them. You know, recently I heard from a patron, actually just over the weekend, who was up at Taddy Bogle Cider Works. Heard the podcast with Kurt Henry, went up there, actually hung out with Kurt Henry. I'm sure they were geeking out. And now, wouldn't you know, Kurt is going to go down to Robert's own permaculture heirloom orchard that he has, I believe, in the good state of Virginia. So this is the way it happens. All these beautiful connections with people who just love cider, love orchards, and love sharing that goodwill. So be in good company and become a patron today. Why not? If this is podcast has meaning to you and is something that you find value from, it would sure make a big difference, especially as we're rolling into the season ahead, which is number 7, a good lucky number indeed.
Dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Well, it's time now for our featured conversation with Plowman Cider. This is one of my stops on the Ciderfield road trip this past July when I headed to Pennsylvania and New York. The day before, I had been out to Taddy Bogle Cider Works, and that is episode 290, which I featured last week. And I then turned around from Taddy Bogle and headed back east again to Adams County. And that night before I was set to meet Plowman, I was camped out at a state park down the road. And there was a whole bunch of AT hikers, through hikers, because the Appalachian Trail is a really long East Coast trail that I believe it starts in Georgia and then goes all the way up to Maine, ends up at this big old mountain called Katahdin. So there's a lot of through hikers that stopped at the state park, and I was camped out in my little Plymouth Voyager, got up early the next day because later that evening I was heading all the way back to Massachusetts, my own perfect spot of Ciderville. But I had this stop and one more stop along the way. And when I finally arrived at what is called Three Springs Farm, and which you're going to hear a little bit about the beginnings of that, Ben Wank wasn't there. He was the founder of Plowman Cider, but his dad was. David Wenk. So he and I sat down a bit, and I tell you, you know, sometimes when circumstances kind of fall through, it opens up another door that you didn't expect. So we're going to be kicking this off first with David Wenk. The guy's been farming his whole life, taking on this multi-generational orchard, and is essentially the family historian. So we're going to go there first, and then we'll go into our conversation with Ben Wenk.
Our family, the Wanks, arrived here in 1818, one guy.
Arrived from where?
Rien, Switzerland.
Oh, okay, Swiss.
And he was a blacksmith by trade, and he started a blacksmith shop up the road, one half a mile. So we've pretty much moved one half a mile from 1818 until now. There's a little village a half a mile up the road that is called Wanksville.
Yeah, the two churches on either side, identical. Yeah. I had to take a photo of it. Amazing.
Well, that first settler, 6 years after his arrival, married a young lady who's had an uncle with no heirs, and my ancestor purchased that farm next to the property where the blacksmith shop was. And it was a pretty big farm. It was like 300 acres at the time. And it had this one-room schoolhouse on it. If you look back on different maps and things, this happened all the time. The school went by the name of the owner of the farm. You can see it was Fissel Schoolhouse, and then it was Baldwin Schoolhouse, which was the family he bought the farm from. And then it became Wank Schoolhouse. But during the time when he owned the farm and it was Wank Schoolhouse, a Lutheran congregation started meeting in the school. And that expanded. Eventually, they built a church where that Methodist church is now. And a Methodist congregation started, and it was a union church. And at some point, it burned down, and then they each built their own church on each side of the road.
My goodness.
And the cemetery that was there, and the property where the school was, the second generation passed, that was deeded over to the churches out of that estate. And that was like 1890 or so, which brings us, we're starting to get to the point of how we got down here.
Just about a half mile away.
The second generation, which would have included my great-grandfather, and when his father passed, my great-grandfather had 10 adult siblings at the time of their father's passing. And he was the only one that stayed with the farm. So he got like 30 acres out of that 300.
Your father.
My great-grandfather.
Your great-grandfather, okay, all right.
And that property is near here. And he lived there about 10 years until he was able to buy this farm from the Wally family in 1901 or 2. I think it might have been 02 until it was settled. So we've been here ever since 1902. Cool. So we've been our century farm. We had the Secretary of Agriculture, Russell Redding, come out. We have a sign out there. We haven't put that up yet either.
How long ago did you get that sign?
Oh, that was just like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay,
or so.
All right. Yeah.
It wasn't that long, but I think part of the problem is we don't know quite where to put it. I think we're going to put it on that wall out there in front of your car somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, how many century farms are there in Pennsylvania?
Now, that I don't know.
Yeah. I would kind of suspect there's a couple of them.
Oh, yes. There's a few. There's a few amazing farms. What do they call bice? There's some. I've been in families for 200 years.
Yeah. And you call it the Three Springs.
The name Three Springs comes from the original survey for application for a patent deed. On that original survey, it was called Three Springs, and the date was 1767 when they... The neat thing, and I could get it out. We don't like to get it out because it's falling apart, that piece of that document.
Yeah, of course.
But on if you think of a rectangle or a square, on two of the four sides it says vacant.
Huh.
No one had claimed it yet.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So we think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
And so when my dad wanted me and then later my brother to come into the business, he set up a partnership, and instead of calling it like Wank's Fruit Farm, he called it Three Springs.
Well, that's a lovely
name. Use the
name
of the farm.
Yeah, it's a lovely name.
Yes.
It really is.
We've had two instances where other people in the county want to kind of co-opt the name. The one was a bunch of guys started a farm markets in the D.C. area, and there were three of them. So they wanted to call it Three Springs, and they found out we had already... What's the...
Trademarked?
Trademarked it, yes. Yeah, we registered it. Currently, there's a Three Springs farm a retired military guy has outside of McKnightstown, Cashtown, somewhere. And, you know, I hate to be, you know, it's not like there's a conflict or something.
Yeah,
but I've had people say, you know, what's with your farm over there? That's not ours. I mean, what's in it for me to...
Well, even if you have a trademark, you still have to pursue the folks who are going on your trademark. It's not like, you know, you have to remind people. And I have trademarks, and I have to do that all the time. It just goes with the territory.
Yes.
Yeah. So you are all these years later, and you've seen this progression of, you know, purely fresh fruit, and now this value-added product. How do you see that working in? Is it working out for
you
folks?
I think Ben had a good model. He looks at all these, the farm market and Plowman, mm-hmm. as another part of the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it can stand on its own, but mm-hmm. It's a way to connect and get exactly what you said, another value-added product.
Yeah, because fresh juice, and then you put it in a smaller format bottle, and you're getting the same amount, if not more, than you're getting for like a gallon jug of cider if you sell fresh juice that way. I mean, it's
some of what you're saying. I mean, to me, that's kind of the American thing. You do more work, you get more, you get paid more for it, mm-hmm. which is kind of the way fruit works. You know, mm-hmm. really good fruit, you have to work real hard to get it grown right and get it harvested right, hand do it right to get it to market right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm.
If you mess up any steps of the way, bad fruit's not worth anything.
Right, right. Your apples right now on the farm, obviously there's varieties that are more select for fermenting versus
that's kind of a new thing. There's six acres that are exclusively that, but then there's varieties that Ben has been marketing as a single varietal ciders like Gold Rush.
Yep.
And you look right there beside, it's funny, I don't know how this is just flowing for me. Just the other day I looked at that, and it's like I think that's only 3 or 4 years old. And we might have done things a little differently there if we were going fresh market or we needed to. But I'm thinking, you know, we'll probably get 1,500 gallons of cider out of that 2 acres there.
That's pretty
maybe
amazing.
2,000.
Yeah, wow. Do you press here?
We hire someone to do our pressing. We have plans. There's one property out there next to the preserved one, 7 miles away in Gardner's, where I happen to live. A little 13-acre property. A neighbor of ours, we used to rent it, and he wanted us to buy it, and it was zoned... I don't want to say commercial, but it can be commercial.
Mm.
We have not preserved that farm because we think that maybe we'll put our production facility there and do everything ourselves sometime.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
And including a retail space, and there's an incredible vista out there, too.
Oh, my goodness.
There you're looking south, and you can see on a clear day, pretty clear today, you could probably see the mountains down at Thurmont, Maryland from there.
Wow.
You're going the whole way across the county that way.
That's a view. That's a million-dollar view.
You're really creating a legacy here. And, you know, Ben getting involved in cider at this moment in time in history for America is...
Well, that's kind of what he thought about it. He said, you know, we just, you know, farm markets are up and going, and, you know, the timing of this may not be the best, guys, but, you know, if we're going to do it, we're going to have to do it now,
mm-hmm.
or we're going to be way behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just tell you, I know you're recording this, but the number one thing that Edwin and Ben have been doing, they want a quality product. And I don't hear it very often anymore where, and there's a retail outlet, you know, in the square, and maybe he'll go there, I don't know. But everything is dry. Our ciders are all dry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have, you know, we're friends of the other cider makers
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
If I drink something anymore that, all that sugar, I just can't take it. And the other thing yeah. is, there's no easier way to mask an inferior product than to dump sugar on it. And that's exactly why they won't do it. Why they won't backfill with... that won't be on there.
He mouthed a word just now. Yeah, well, I mean, the dry palate is kind of it's like an informed palate, and it's also where a drinker will go as they mature in age, right? You know, we were young, but we were drinking, you know, like sweet stuff, and then it kind of changes. So that's part of it too.
If I'm in a real kind of a feisty mood and someone asks me about sweet, I'll say, Thunderbird and Boone's Farm has already been done.
That's true. Remember that. Right.
We don't need to do that again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's the future of American cider. It's, you know, we have wine coolers, and then we have premium wines. We have, you know, lawnmower beers, and we have premium beers. And you're making a premium product here, and that's going to last a lifetime,
right.
an absolute legacy.
And I'm glad that, you know, there are people like you, Rhea, that are promoting cider. Because, I mean, especially in Pennsylvania, I don't know if that's true around, you know, I'm supporting Ben. This is all Ben's business
mm-hmm.
now.
Got it.
Don't get
yeah.
me wrong here.
Yeah.
The laws in Pennsylvania going into and coming out of Prohibition left no place for cider. So people my age, they don't know what cider is. They taste it. You know, they're already kind of... You know, you heard this, your grandmother say, you're set in your ways.
Mm-hmm.
You're a beer drinker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're any, in my opinion, your only chance to get a beer drinker to drink some of your cider is a hopped
cider.
And we have a really good one, by the way, that's won some awards at the farm show. But anyhow, you know what I mean? Beer distributors, 5% and less. You had the state store, 12% and up.
Right.
How are you going to get cider in there?
Mm-hmm.
The only way, and yeah. this is why I'll give a free pass card to some of the first cider makers that backfilled down with juice to get their alcohol content down to 5,
mm-hmm.
is they could sell it at the beer distributor.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, why would you want to do that and compete with Miller Brewing at a beer distributor or InBev? Why would you want to do that? How are you going?
Do you have an answer?
How are you going to? Well, you'd have to be nuts.
Well,
why would you want to? You'd have to start off with a business and create enough volume to try to.
Yeah.
That's just not right.
Yeah.
You've got to try. I mean, I think the right model is to try to create a superior product that somehow differentiates itself from the keg beer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the direction.
That has to be
it's
the direction
going,
industry has to go.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, and it's happening, no doubt.
pretty cool to hear that a family such as the Wang family has been in the area since 1818 and only moved up the road a mile and a half since that time to 2021. That was David Wang, and next up we're going to be hearing from his son, Ben Wang, all about Plum and Cider.
I went to Penn State University, the University Park College of Ag, and got a major in agro-ecosystem science, or agroecology, as it was called by the time I got my degree, and had a minor in horticulture while I was there as well.
Oh, that works well, huh?
Yeah, and had the good fortune of doing a lot of, you know, internships here at the Pennsylvania, FREC, the Fruit Research Extension Center, and while I was on campus too. So I got a lot of meaningful kind of, you know, research, data collection kind of experience as well.
When you were growing up as a kid on an apple farm, were you thinking in the back of your mind, I want to continue this family legacy? Or
It wasn't a straight line to that.
Yeah.
I came back around to it. I was looking at, you know, potentially doing like music professionally, either music ed or going to school, and did a bunch of you know, music school auditions, even by the time I figured out that that wasn't really kind of where I wanted my career to be focused. In a lot of ways, like, I think that, you know, being able to keep music in my life as a passion and not maybe the thing that I have to do to, you know, sustain myself.
Right, not easy road.
Right, was an important realization that I stumbled upon at that age. But just growing up in this, you know, very fruit-growing community, my family, the other farming families of Adams County, for whatever reason, they always talked about their profession as fruit grower, never apple farmer. Like, I'm a fruit grower. And I don't know what about that specifically appealed to me, but when I actually stopped and thought about, you know, I could kind of be part of that community, that I could, you know, someday call myself a fruit grower, that's kind of one of the things that brought me back. And, you know, the respect that I have for a lot of folks here in the apple industry in Adams County, of course, my family primarily, but, you know, the other folks that I would get to work beside and work with. And, you know, that was a real driving force in my decision to come back.
Where did cider come into to this lineup?
It's very proudly a venture born of farmers markets. Like so many great businesses in this country, it was kind of born and incubated at farmers markets. The first time we ever went to farmers market, it was in Philadelphia. That was kind of like what I contributed when I first came back from college. And, you know, through the farmers market, we met a lot of amazing people. We would start seeing restaurant chefs come to visit the market. Eventually that led to us delivering to restaurants during the week. You know, they would pick up stuff from market on Sunday in Philadelphia, and then maybe we'd deliver on Wednesday that same week. Built these relationships. Even that first year of doing farmers markets in Philadelphia was the first time I ever had a Strongbow draft. I didn't even know it was a cider when I ordered it. I was just looking for any tap handle I didn't recognize.
Wow.
And I remember Dad and I sitting at the bar when I had this first Strongbow, and we were both like, you know, it was not the overly sweetened versions of cider that I had had in college, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was just a little bit more to it. And it was the kind of thing that, you know, really kind of sparked my interest. By that fall, we were having fresh cider pressed with custom hire to go to those farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I had enough interest that I bought a couple used whiskey barrels. And anytime that brown fresh cider that we were going to market, it was UV treated. It wasn't heat pasteurized.
Okay.
So like after two trips, it wouldn't be worth taking anymore.
Right, right.
We just started filling the barrel.
Wow.
And eventually, you know, pitched some yeast in there, and without really knowing what I was doing, you know, very hands-off cider making by neglect, but it was, you know, I was what, 22, 23 years old at the time. So, you know, after a little bit of time, it was alcohol, and, you know, it would be a good excuse to have a party. And so that was kind of the whole genesis of it. And then I actually started studying it and bringing more interesting ciders back. And, you know, saw Steve Wood's contribution to the Botany of Desire documentary, and saw a bunch of other Pennsylvania farm fruit farming families pursue this as a business, and eventually decided that, you know, it would kind of be a good fit for us too.
Mm-hmm. So the name Plowman, what was that born from? What's that about?
Sure. Yeah, well, that was kind of a long and winding road. The short version is I had really, well, when it tied the product to the land, you know, it has, mm-hmm. you know, the plow and that connection to the soil, you know, the term plowman, tends to describe somebody who is, you know, a field worker, or somebody who's involved in manual labor, very blue collar kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, you wanted to make ciders that were, you know, of a high quality, but were still approachable, that didn't feel, you know, like this wouldn't be something that was made on a farm and consumed by farmers. You know, we didn't want to give that, we wanted to give a value perception, but not so much that it felt inaccessible. You know, certainly, you know, Plowman's Lunch and the affinity that I had kind of gotten for English cider when I'd found it in other areas, like, you couldn't find that stuff in Pennsylvania. I'd have to go down to places like Max's Tap House and Fells Point and bring it back from places in Maryland that had a better cider selection when I was learning about all this stuff. So that's kind of how we landed on the name. Long Winding Road. We had probably three or four other names that would just get kind of disrupted by as new cideries were coming in the market in that very, you know, expanded growth period of 2014 or 2016. By the time we opened in 2016, there was a lot of cideries coming online. And when I would have a good idea for a cider name, someone else would have something close enough that it's like, ah, we'll guess, we'll do something else.
You launched in like 2016 commercially, and you're using all the apples from your property, which is like, you know, huge. It's a huge farm, a fruit farm. Was it you as a cider maker at that point, or have you always been working with Edwin?
We've always worked with Edwin. Okay. That was really a real important part of building this out.
Why don't we say Edwin's full name?
Sure. Hans Edwin Winsler. That's our cider maker. He's been with us from the start. He's an incredibly talented guy. Has a lot of great history. Has traveled in his quest to, kind of hone his craft of cider making, and, you know, just has a great skill set between his intelligence and passion for science and his, kind of more artistic way of looking at things. Our company is what it is because of the products he makes, and mm-hmm. we never would have gotten here if I was making it. I'll just be completely honest with you.
Well, you know, it always works well to have the right people, you know, surrounding you. And I understand he was in the UK for a year with like premier cider makers over there, and I'm sure even more extensive. Let's talk about your products.
Sure. We make a wide range at this point. We have a lot of different blends that we're selling at the present time. I guess it was kind of late summer of 2019 when we made the transition to cans. You know, our cidery was, again, kind of born of farmers markets and continues to sell at farmers markets. We do, what is it? I think it's 10 a month at the present time, 10 farmers markets a month in different parts of central Pennsylvania and also two in Philadelphia. You know, those are places where a lot of our kind of larger format bottles tend to shine.
The 750 mil bottles.
Yep, 750. We do a little bit of 500s as well. Mm-hmm. The real new thing that we're eager to continue to roll out, and this requires a little tip of the hat to the folks at Ross on Y, where Edwin had spent some time when he was over there, and one of my favorite spots when I was over as well, is we are going to be doing a program now where we're going to be focused on single varietal fermentations. And we really value not only the kind of fun investigation that kind of experience can be, but also its ability to educate consumers a little bit more about, like, you know, just cider for the reasons that we appreciate it, that that, you know, you can change so much with apple varieties. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to grow so many great apple varieties here in Adams County that, you know, let that be part of the way we talk about our cider making and part of the way that we're educating our the public and our consumers about, you know, hey, these different apple varieties have wildly different characteristics, and you can really tell when they're presented that way.
Mm-hmm. And then when it's in a blend, they'll be able to start picking them out, which is, it's great education. I love that you're doing that.
Yeah.
So there's two bottles right here. One is Gold Rush and one is Arkansas Black. Can I ask about the artwork? Who did that? Because that looks kind of familiar to me.
Yeah, I suspected. A lot of our great cider drinkers will recognize this individual's apple art. It's Eric Lewandowski of Heirloom Apples is doing the illustrations for this series.
And, beautiful.
You know, it's just an incredibly nice guy to be around and to hang out with. And so it only made sense for us to find something that we could work on together, if only for an excuse to be in contact a little bit more regularly. But yeah, these are the first two kind of official releases in that single varietal series, and two very kind of stark contrasts in presentation. The Arkansas Black being our first pet nat cider, and then the Gold Rush being, you know, a long maturation, long fermentation, very rounded, more developed, layered kind of beverage. Whereas the Arkansas Black, very young, kind of like super fruity, mimosa, express and discard kind of characteristics. And then like the Gold Rush being like the more long-term developed, layered, rounded type of cider. So, and you know, a little bit of change in fermentation techniques and bottling techniques, but the most important thing is that difference in variety, and it's such a stark contrast. It's really
great.
Fun.
That's fantastic, Ben. And the Gold Rush is a barrel aged, and the Arkansas Black is not.
Right.
But
yeah.
So it says pet nat, and you just say this: the Gold Rush is also pet nat.
No.
Just barrel aged. So
yeah.
So, what's your barrel program here like?
Yeah.
So I always like saying barrel program.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, we're cider, kind of like we're scaling up.
Yeah. Well, our use of barrels is almost a spinoff from some fun brandy collaborations that we've been able to do. So we started a few years ago working with a great distillery in D.C. called Republic Restoratives, makers of Chapman Apple Brandy. And we were kind of connected through some mutual friends in D.C. and started maybe 16 or something, quite a while ago, with their brandy program. And after its initial success, you know, they wanted to expand that into years 2 and 3 and increase the volume. And I just kind of thought to myself for a second, I'm like, well, you know, would you be willing in case of just, you know, if you want to double your volume in case of, you know, writing out a 2x big check, would you want to trade on some fresh barrels? When we deliver the cider, we can take some barrels back in and kind of meet in the middle. And, you know, so we were able to get our hands on some really nice French oak that they've been using
distillery. What were they putting in? What was in it before?
Some of them were brandy barrels. Some of them were whiskey barrels.
So would we expect to get the profile? Like this says barrel age, but I'm not necessarily sure what kind of barrel it was in. The barrels aren't neutral at this point, so they are lending some type of
that was the second use.
Okay.
So they're
right.
Getting to that kind of neutral sweet spot, which is like where we like it. But yeah, I know for sure it's French oak. What the previous occupant was, that's more of an Edwin question. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right.
You know, a lot of our program is based on Johnny Gold, Gold Rush, and Stamen.
So that's like your base blend, Jonathan, Stamen, and Gold Rush.
It's kind of split. Like Johnny Gold with Gold Rush is a big part of it, and then. And we do a lot of single varietal Stamen as well. That's actually our best-selling cider, cans, draft, anything. The single varietal wild fermented Stamen is sold out. Our quince cider. I know you guys are big quince advocates, so I had to get that plug in there.
Yeah.
We have our quinces planted right up here on the hill. We'll see it as soon as we walk out. And
do you know what the varieties are?
I know what's planted there. I don't know which is which.
Okay.
I know we have pineapple quince, We have one from the local nursery that's their Boyer quince from Boyer Nursery here in Adams County. There are some with Russian names that I recognize when I see, but I can't think of off the top of my head. They've all come from Boyer Nurseries.
Like Kuginskaya or Aromatnaya.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, quince are so forgiving.
Oh, you know, yeah.
They just want to play with everybody.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that's going to be fun.
Some of the other varieties we didn't talk about, we have about 6 acres planted exclusively for cider. You know, that's where you're going to get your more bittersweets and bitter sharps. Those are planted mostly on 118 and interstem rootstock, 9111. And so them being like more kind of semi-dwarfing rootstocks, it was only really last year that we got kind of our first big harvest on a lot of those varieties. And there are several varieties in that in those two blocks. It's probably 11 or 12, I think, different varieties. And you know, as large as 400 tree per variety to as few as, you know, 20 here and 20 there. And some of the stuff we wanted to just kind of see what how it would grow around mm-hmm. us here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of our five-year plan, you know, as those trees come more into bearing and we're getting larger harvests of our bittersweet and bitter sharp, is to, you know, continue to not only make new blends with those varieties, but to, you know, expand our single varietal series and do some investigations of some of those more unique bittersweets and bitter sharps and things like Wicks and Crabapple, doing single varieties of those. Mm-hmm. And, you know, putting those in different levels of distribution. Like those ciders might end up in 750s, they might be in 500s. They might be enough just for our cider club, which I think is a real, you know, growth opportunity in the next 5 years. We'd like to see our membership continue to grow as it has been in our cider club as people kind of figure out the kinds of things we like to do. Mm-hmm. That I think would be a part of that as well.
Potential tasting room and production facility?
Yeah, exactly.
I heard your dad talking a little bit to me about that.
Yeah, we're excited about that. You know, we had the chance to get a little social time in at our friends at Big Hill, which is right down the road mm-hmm. from us, and those guys do such a wonderful job. And, you know, we anticipate, you know, sooner than later, you know, it's something we've actively been working on. And putting a tap room on our farm, which would be, you know, really, as a crow flies, it's probably a mile and a half. It might be all of 2 or 3 road miles to get to where we would like to build to where their current tap room is. So it makes a great, you know, day away, weekend vacation from anywhere to stop by and visit both of us. So that's yep. definitely in that 5-year plan. I would be disappointed and shocked if that project wasn't completed in a 5-year window. Mm-hmm. I think we could probably get that started even this fall mm-hmm. And get our production expanded a little bit. And, you know, after that, we really, you know, we want to be a small regional brand. I mean, we want to be able to, you know, bring an audience of cider enthusiasts from a region of our area for people that love cider, you know, for them to recognize the kinds of cider and the quality of cider that we can make in Adams County based on our horticulture, based on our soils and our regionality here, and be able to draw, you know, a regional audience of cider enthusiasts to Adams County. And that's it. That's
a good goal. But, you know, I mean, sometimes it's like it's like the painter knowing when to stop. And then it's yeah. right at perfection. And yeah. you're getting really close to that with your setup. You certainly have the land to be able to do that and the enthusiasm of your family and support and a good cider maker like Edwin to work with and your whole drive too and good cheer. It's just a match made in heaven. So I wish you all the best of luck with that.
Thank you so much. And thank you for what you do. It's a great podcast. Regular listener and just getting the word out to as many people as you reach and talking about cider to a wider audience, it helps everybody. So we really appreciate that too.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
from David Wank at Three Springs Farm and Ben Wank of Plum and Cider. Plum and Cider has a tap room in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and it does sound like that there's going to be a production facility and a tasting room in the near future, a little bit closer to the Three Springs Farm area. A lot going on here in Adams County, the fruit belt of Pennsylvania. Well, I think that's a wrap there, Ciderville, for this year, episode 291. Only 9 episodes away from the 300th episode of Cider Chat. And then we'll be putting a close to season 6. Hoo-wee, huh? Wow. So much good news to be had out there in Ciderville. Much like the folks in Adams County, you know, we had Plum and Cider. We spoke to Big Hill Cider and just so much more. So many more voices to be heard. And I am just loving it. I want to make a little reminder, if you want to have a little taste of Montana and Idaho ciders, and one special one made out of Oregon using a McIntosh from Montana, don't forget to go to nwciderclub.com/podcast and put in your order today. You know it's going to be selling out. And of course, if you're feeling a little bit of a good cheer and getting some good value from this podcast, do consider making a little donation, a little tip to this podcaster via the donate button at ciderchat.com. And there's also the option to become a patron today. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like ponds. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like ponds. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason.
We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet,
oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!